On our last program, I left you with a cliffhanger. I guess you know that's what they used to call the end of an episode in the old movie serials, where you had to come back, usually the next Saturday, to see how the hero got out of that terrible predicament he was in. But that was just my way of hoping you would come back to hear this program. You were also asked to have a piece of paper in front of you showing the Federal Reserve at 6 o'clock, the Treasury at 9 o'clock, John Q. Citizen at 12 o'clock, and the First State Bank at 3 o'clock. I said it would be helpful if you drew lines showing how the money travels from the Fed to the Treasury to John Q. Citizen to the First State Bank and back to the Federal Reserve. In that program, we explained how, when the U.S. government needs to borrow money, it gives the Federal Reserve bonds to use as collateral so that the Fed will loan our Treasury Department money. On the last program, the Treasury borrowed $1 billion so it could pay the Social Security benefits for the month. I left you with Congressman Wright Patman, who, in 1941, asked Mariner Eccles, the governor of the Federal Reserve, a question. And Wright Patman's question was, where did you get the money to purchase those government bonds? That's where the program ended. Now we'll continue. After Congressman Wright Patman asked Mariner Eccles, where did you get the money to buy those government bonds? Mr. Eccles replied, we created it. Out of what? Asked the congressman. Out of our right to create credit money, replied Mr. Eccles. Then Congressman Wright Patman asked, and there is nothing behind it, is there, except our government credit? Mr. Eccles replied, that is what our money system is. If there were no debts in our money system, there wouldn't be any money. Now draw a line from the Federal Reserve to the U.S. Treasury. Our Treasury Department now has $1 billion in its checking account. The Treasury Department can now send John Q. Citizen his Social Security check for, oh, let's say, $1,000. You can now draw a line from the Treasury to John Q. Citizen. John Q. Citizen can deposit his check in the First State Bank. Draw a line from John Q. Citizen to the First State Bank. The First State Bank then sends the check to the Federal Reserve Bank in its area. Draw a line from the First State Bank to the Federal Reserve Bank. When the Federal Reserve gets the check is canceled, just like a postage stamp is canceled. Something interesting happens when John Q. Citizen deposits his check. John's checking account is credited with $1,000 at the First State Bank. Also, the First State Bank's reserve account is credited with $1,000 by the Federal Reserve Bank in its area. John Q. Citizen can legally write checks totaling no more than $1,000. But the First State Bank can take the $1,000 deposit, and if the reserve requirement is 10% and all its loans come back to his bank as deposits, he can legally loan out $9,000 based on the $1,000 deposit and collect interest on the full $9,000 and get elected president of the Chamber of Commerce. You get this, as we said before, by dividing $1,000 by 10%, which gives you $10,000, but you must subtract $1,000 the bank cannot loan out because it is required to keep the $1,000 in reserve. As you can see, the government borrowed $1 billion from the Federal Reserve, which the Federal Reserve got from nothing. And this could allow the commercial banks to expand the $1 billion to the total of another $9 billion, which it got from nothing. Yet the commercial banks along with the Federal Reserve, are collecting interest on the entire $10 billion, and it was all done with nothing. This is not to insult anyone's intelligence, just to remind you that when a loan is made by a commercial bank, only the parties to whom the loan is made out to are responsible for the repayment of the loan. But when the government borrows the money, we, all of us citizens, are responsible for the repayment of the loan. And both loans are generating interest. Where are we going to get the interest to pay on the $1 billion the Treasury borrowed? The Fed created the $1 billion, but the $1 billion was the principal which will be repaid to the Fed. The Fed did not create any interest. The interest is just a ghost that we must chase and use part of someone else's principal to repay both the principal and interest on the $1 billion the Fed loaned the Treasury. Much of the population feel that when they borrow money, their assets increase by the amount of the loan. But this is a misconception. When a person borrows, let's say, $1,000, his or her $1,000 asset is offset by a $1,000 loan liability, and his or her net position is still zero. I'm going to mention something here that caused me to reflect on it until I got it straight in my head. So I am suggesting you may have to do the same. The $1 billion the Fed created for the U.S. Treasury is used as reserves and does not go out into the public for use to purchase cars, TVs, groceries, or clothes. We will only use the $9 billion created by the commercial banks to spend. The $1 billion the Fed created is used only as reserves and is not counted as part of the M1 supply. I'll try to clarify this, but even the clarification is somewhat confusing. But here goes. I mentioned before that the transaction of the Treasury borrowing money from the Fed is usually handled through a bond dealer. With this example, I'm going to use $10,000 instead of $1 billion. I think, especially in this case, $10,000 is easier to picture instead of $1 billion. Let's assume the bond dealer handles the sale of $10,000 of government bonds from the Treasury to the Fed. Assuming the bond dealer has an account in Bank A, Bank A's deposits and reserves would increase by $10,000. What if the bond dealer writes checks and spends the entire $10,000? Bank A would lose both deposits and reserves, totaling $10,000. But other banks would gain the $10,000 in both deposits and reserves. They might come in smaller denominations depending on how the bond dealer spent the money. The important thing to remember is that the initial deposit does not disappear until the Federal Reserve sell the bonds that were used as the basis for the source of the original $10,000 of expansion. We'll discuss what happens to the money supply when the Fed sells bonds very shortly. Sometimes the banks don't have enough in their reserve accounts to make loans. When this happens, they can go to the Fed and ask for a loan to put in their reserve account. Draw a line from the Federal Reserve to the First State Bank. Then the bank can loan John Q. Citizen, let's say, $100. Draw a line from the First State Bank to John Q. Citizen. Let's assume that John Q. Citizen borrowed that money so he can pay his income taxes to the Treasury Department on April 15th. Draw a line from John Q. Citizen to the U.S. Treasury. Now the Treasury can pay some of the interest on the original loan to the Federal Reserve. draw a line from the U.S. Treasury to the Federal Reserve. This is how the Federal Reserve makes its profits. Question: where did the Federal Reserve get the money to loan to the bank when the bank did not have enough reserves to make more loans? That was question number 47 in a book titled Money Facts, published by the Federal Reserve. This publication is no longer in print, so don't try to find it. Anyway, here is their answer. Quote, "It didn't get the money, it created it. When the Federal Reserve writes a check, it is creating money. This can result in a demand deposit or in reserves. If the customer prefers cash, the Fed has the Treasury's Department of Printing and Engraving print Federal Reserve notes. The Federal Reserve is a total money-making machine. It can create money or checks, and it never has a problem making its checks good because it can obtain the $5 and $10 necessary to cover its checks simply by having the Treasury Department's Bureau of Printing and Engraving print them." Maybe this is a good time to see if you might agree with Thomas Jefferson. He thought that no one has the right to the trade of a money lender but he who has money to lend. Of course, the Federal Reserve didn't have the money to lend, and the First State Bank didn't have the money to lend, but it lent it anyway. Now, when the bank borrows money from the Federal Reserve, the entire amount of the loan is usually used as the bank's reserve. So the bank can borrow $1 million, let's say at 4%, and make loans totaling $9 million at, let's say, 6%. All these figures I'm using are strictly arbitrary, as you probably know. But here's a little footnote I thought I would stick in here since we mentioned paying taxes to the IRS. Have you ever wondered what happens to all that money the government is deducting from your paycheck every week and is forcing you to pay any they hadn't already confiscated from you by April 15th? When Ronald Reagan was president, he appointed a commission to answer these questions. It was called the Grace Commission. It was headed by J. Peter Grace. Here is what they discovered. With two-thirds of everyone's personal income taxes wasted or not collected, 100% of what is collected is absorbed solely by interest on the federal debt and by government contributions to transfer payments. In other words, all individual income tax revenues are gone before one nickel is spent on the government services which taxpayers expect from their government. The end of that quote. You know, there was a book written by John Maynard Keynes entitled Consequences of the Peace. This was written shortly after the First World War. In this book, he said that if we don't police this system with taxes, then the fraud upon the people can be concealed no longer. Well, I hope this gives some understanding of where your taxes go and makes you feel better about paying your income taxes. By the way, you can pull up the Grace Commission report online. But right now, let's get back to more money creation. L.B. Angus, a financial writer, put it this way. Banks create money out of absolutely nothing. It is perhaps the greatest piece of sleight of hand that was ever invented. I think L.B. Angus was right. So I'm going to ask you these two questions. Question one, is the power to create money a great power or not? Question number two, where does this great power come from? Because there is no clause in the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 which gives the Federal Reserve Banks the authority to create money. Nor is there any law, statute, code, edict, mandate, rule, or regulation that allows commercial banks or any other financial institution to create money. How do banks and the Federal Reserve get away with this scam? Well, they don't really create any money. They just extend credit. Many people in authority say that Congress delegated that power to the Federal Reserve and the banks. I guess they did on December 23, 1913, but there is an old axiom in common law that says, delegatus non protest delegara, or delegara non protest delegatus. I'm really not sure. I don't understand Latin. I have a tough enough time with the English language. Anyway, that Latin phrase, whatever it is, means the delegated may not delegate. The U.S. citizens delegated to Congress the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. And Congress may not, according to that old common law axiom, delegate that power to anyone. Now, how about John Q. Citizen? Where is he going to get the interest to pay on his $100 loan? He's going to be chasing a ghost, too. He will have to use someone else's principal. What happens now? Logically, somewhere along the line, will not have enough money to pay both the principal and the interest. He will have two more choices. He can take out another loan or go bankrupt. Does this help you understand better why some people who were previously unfamiliar with these things have expressed interest and enthusiasm, but also reluctance to accept as truth the fact that our government, without getting anything whatsoever in return, gives the Federal Reserve notes to private bankers for them to loan out at interest even back to the government itself? To them, this seems so senseless as to be unbelievable. Even Reginald McKenna, who was of England's Exchequer, said in 1934, "I am afraid the ordinary citizen will not like to be told that the banks can and do create money, and they, who control the credit of a nation, direct the policy of the governments, and hold in the hollow of their hands the destiny of the people." Do you also see what Thomas Edison meant when he said, "It is stupid to borrow $30 million and have to pay money lenders $66 million for the use of the money"? If a nation can issue a dollar bond, it can issue a dollar bill. The element that makes the bond good makes the bill good also. The difference between the bond and the bill is that the bond lets the money brokers collect twice the amount of the bond. Edison said this while speaking of the Muscle Shoals project that Roosevelt wanted to develop in Alabama. And speaking on the same project, he said that people who will not turn a shovel of dirt on the project nor contribute a pound of material will collect more money than will the people who will supply all the materials and do all the work. Now I'm going to talk a little more about banks' reserves. There are quite a few ways the banks' reserves can fluctuate. For instance, if we are using the 10% requirement for the banks' reserves, and if a bank has $1,000 in its reserve account, and a customer writes a check for $100, let's say to pay his or her monthly electric bill, the bank's deposits will decrease by $100, but the reserve balance will only decrease by $10. Writing the check to pay the electric bill decreases the bank's reserve account only by 10%. If this same bank customer cashes a check for $100 and withdraws $100 in cash, the bank's deposit will decrease by $100, but the reserve balance will also decrease by $100. When withdrawing cash from the bank, the reserves and deposits diminish dollar for dollar. Think of cash in the bank as the goldsmith's gold in his warehouse. Reserve balances and the bank's cash are not counted as part of the money stock held by the public. Money stock held by the public is also referred to as the M1 supply. Bad weather can also affect reserves, usually only for a day or two, though. The Treasury keeps part of its operating cash balance on deposits in banks, but almost all of their disbursements are made from its balance in the reserve banks. Any buildup in balances at the reserve banks prior to expenditure by the Treasury causes a dollar-for-dollar drain on the bank's reserves. When the Treasury makes payments out of their accounts at the Federal Reserve, the bank's reserve accounts increase. There are also quite a few other instances that affect the reserve account of the banks. For instance, intervention in foreign exchanges for the Federal Reserve's own accounts is one instance. Treasury purchases and sales of foreign currency. Sales and purchases of gold stock and gold certificates are other instances. Our Treasury no longer purchases gold stock, and its sales of gold stock is limited, but the result can affect reserve balances. And don't forget, what I'm giving you is an overall view of deposits and reserves because our time is limited and we cannot go into more detail. You can read how banks' reserves fluctuate online and in more detail by pulling up the Federal Reserve Banks of Chicago's publication, Modern Money Mechanics. Reading it can also be a good cure for insomnia. We've talked about money creation and expansion. But what happens when the Federal Reserve wants to reduce the volume of money? They tell us on page 3 of the publication, Modern Money Mechanics. It says, quote, just as purchases of government bonds by the Federal Reserve System can provide the basis for deposit expansion by adding to banks' reserves, sales of bonds by the Federal Reserve System reduce the money stock by absorbing bank reserves. Let's examine this previous statement from the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. As you recall, when the government borrowed the first $1 billion, you and I went into debt to the Federal Reserve for $1 billion more, plus interest. But the Federal Reserve created $1 billion for us, and this allowed the commercial banks to increase the money supply by another $9 billion. As previously stated, the first $1 billion was created as the reserves. When these bonds come due, the Treasury purchases them back. The Treasury was the one that sold them in the first place, and when they come due, the Treasury repurchases them back. What happens when the Treasury purchases them? The money supply drops by the amount of the purchase times 10. Just like the expansion worked, only in reverse. Purchasing $1 billion in mature bonds means a decrease of $10 billion in the volume of money. $10 billion of the money supply is destroyed. Think of the goldsmith and the gold coin. Substitute the bond for the gold coin. It works the same because these bonds are used just like the goldsmith's gold coins. Remember when we talked about the goldsmith was using gold coins as his reserves, and one goldsmith had 2 gold coins and could make 20 paper receipts using the ratio of 10 to 1? But when somebody redeemed one paper receipt, the ratio became 19 to 1 instead of 10 to 1. The same thing happens with government bonds. The government bonds are the same as the goldsmith's gold. If the Federal Reserve sells $1 billion in government bonds, $10 billion must go out of circulation. The ratio of the bank's reserves and loans outstanding must be balanced, and the money supply will shrivel until bankruptcies and house foreclosures increase. we must also remember that we are indebted to whoever owns the government bonds. In this scenario, the Federal Reserve owned them. But the Federal Reserve can also sell government bonds. They can sell them to an individual, a corporation, or another government. Let's pretend the Federal Reserve sells this $1 billion in bonds to General Motors. Now, you and I are no longer indebted to the Federal Reserve for $1 billion. We now owe General Motors $1 billion. But we have $10 billion less in circulation with which to repay it. From my viewpoint, this is where the Tea Party and the so-called conservative Republicans fall flat on their face. These so-called fiscal conservatives are evidently ignorant about what happens to our money supply when any of the U.S. government's debt is repaid. They yell and scream and grind their teeth about the national debt, but they never give any solution to pay off the debt. I agree that we should not have the debt, but the system has to be changed in order for us to escape a financial catastrophe. Where is their solution other than paying off the debt? If our country wants a depression greater than the Great Depression, let the Tea Party sympathizers succeed. John Kenneth Galbraith, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, made some of us aware of this problem when he said that the Federal Reserve definitely caused the Great Depression by contracting the amount of currency in circulation by one-third from 1929 to 1933. He also said that in numerous years following World War II, the federal government ran a heavy surplus. It could not, however, pay off its debt or retire its debt because to do so meant there would be no bonds to back the national banknotes. To pay off the debt was to destroy the money supply. Also, the well-known economist, Milton Friedman, who said, "I know of no severe depression in any country or at any time that was not accompanied by a sharp decline in the stock of money, and equally of no sharp decline in the stock of money that was not accompanied by a severe depression." When the Federal Reserve Bank spends money, the money supply will increase. Using our illustration of 10% reserves to creating money, the volume of money may increase by the multiplication of 10. Whenever any entity pays money to the Federal Reserve, and that money may be in the form of repayment of the principal or the interest on a loan or the principal or interest on government bonds, the money supply must decrease by the multiplier of 10. Please notice the significant words in the preceding statements are may and must. Just because a bank has excess reserves does not mean that it must invest the excess reserves in loans or investment. It just means that it has the option to make the loans or investments. But if a bank's ratio of deposits to reserves is too high, the bank is required to reduce its loans or investments to the mandatory ratio. Here are two rules to remember. When the Federal Reserve buys government bonds, it is creating money. When the Federal Reserve sells bonds, it is destroying money. When money leaves the Federal Reserves, the money supply increases. When money enters the Federal Reserve, the money supply decreases. How many of you knew that when you buy government savings bonds, either for yourself, your children, or your grandchildren, you are destroying the money of your country? If all of our bills were paid, both private and public, there would not be $1 in circulation, cash or credit. Well, that does it for today's show. Hope you join us here next time. Thanks for listening.